Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Tracy Kutschker, but I am without Louise Wallace Richmond today. She's having an important date with her dentist. So I am instead joined by the wonderful team, or two of the wonderful team, of the Literacy Alliance of the Shoe Swap, Darcy Calkins. Good morning.
Good morning, Tracy.
And Violet Pilkey. Good morning, Violet. I've had Violet here before, so it's like old hat, right?
Yeah, I'm a veteran.
Yes. It's been nice, actually, because yeah, you're getting very used to this and helping give instructions to Darcy and everything.
Exactly. I need to learn.
Well, it's kind of fun. Community radio is a great opportunity to talk about things that are going on right here. And that's the exciting thing that we're talking about today is Unplug and Play.
Yes.
So that's coming up on us very soon.
Yeah, it starts on Saturday.
Yeah.
And it goes until next Saturday. So starting on the 21st and it goes till the 28th of January.
Okay, so tell us about what is Unplug and Play, where did it come from, whose idea was this, and how long has it been going on?
Well, Unplug and Play started by ABC Life Literacy, which is a literacy organization out in Ontario, probably about 7 years ago or so, but we have been doing events for Unplug and Play here in the Shoe Swap for about 6 years.
Nice.
Yeah. And in fact, Family Literacy Day happens on January 27th. So that is declared by, again, ABC Life Literacy. DCODA, which is our provincial literacy organization, they have just got the provincial government to declare Family Literacy Week. They do it a little bit differently, January 22nd to the 29th. We like to include two Saturdays to pack in
more
events. Twice the fun.
Yeah. Well,
it's because we have so much to offer here, right?
Yeah.
Like it just seems like there's so many events. So many family events to help you get off screens and
activity. Yeah, last year we ran 51 and this year we have 70.
So. Holy cow.
70 events. That's amazing. Fit them all on the poster this year.
That's so great. Congratulations.
We're really excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful community support and people understanding that they can promote what they've got going on and we get it out there and get the message and link literacy and tie it all together. So.
Okay, so this particular initiative is not just about more literacy, right? It's not just about reading, sitting down and reading as a family.
No, no.
It's more about getting off screens and giving yourself some non-light emitting surface time.
Yes.
Right?
It's all about balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about addressing your media consumption and thinking about how that affects you as a family and how that's changed and changing and how do we, and it's giving us an opportunity and a time to concentrate and think about it. And it's often easier to take small chunks of time and think about it that way.
Yeah. Well, so. And you're right about a week long doesn't seem like much to make a concerted effort, but at least it shows you, right? It shows you what other balancing opportunities there are in the community.
Yeah.
Because not all of these 70-odd events happen in just that week.
Oh, no, no. Yeah, a lot of the events, like, I mean, the swim at the pool, you know, I mean, that's an activity that you can do pretty much year round here, but we're going to make it free and invite you to come out. And in terms of Unplug and Play, I have four children, so I'm doing literacy, but I'm also very active as a mother. And when we first moved here in 2011, we took the Unplug and Play challenge, and I wasn't involved with the Literacy Alliance at that time, but came out through the schools. And every year since, we've done this. And I always say to parents, and we go full no screens the entire week. And I don't know if it wouldn't last throughout the whole year. You know, it wouldn't have the same effect. But for that week, my kids come in, Mom, can we do something, play a video game? And I'm like, it's Unplug and Play week. Oh, right. So our house gets a little bit messier. We have a cards around, board games that...
Yeah,
come out.
Crafts, Play-Doh.
Yeah, we have to embrace a little bit more chaos in our life, a little more cleanup at the end of the day. But it's really fun how they commit to their playing in a different way.
Doing it for a week is so much easier than doing it all the time.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
And when there's all these fun, free events to try out, it's a perfect opportunity to do it as a family.
Yeah.
And it's really great to see all the people come out and try different things. And I'm sure that homes and the events and stuff are pretty noisy, but I think our minds are probably quieter that week.
Well, I think it rewires your brain. I've heard so many stories about families who have like completely unplugged from the world and gone on a kayak trip or camping or whatever, where they've just made the commitment. And they've said at the end of the experience that everybody is changed. They are transformed. And you kind of forget that we do get I know that the word addiction is a very, you know, harsh word to use, but we do become very accustomed to being connected mm-hmm. to our screens. And so breaking that off for just that period of time must have profound effects on our brain.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I, as a parent, I always say the equivalent, like when we were growing up, our parents would say to us, go outside and play yeah. when they wanted a break from us yeah. as children. yeah. And now the equivalent, and it's just changed, is let's put on a show.
Yeah. Or grab your tablet.
Let's sit something. Down. Yeah. And it's the same effect. What the mother and or the father wants, it's just some quiet yeah. and some place, a time when the kids aren't taking out stuff as fast as you're putting it away. Right. And but it used to be the mantra was go outside and play. Just yeah. go. And now, so I mean, it's very easy to slip into this let's just have some downtime.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the effects, I mean, we're talking obesity, we're talking, you know, epidemics of children who have trouble focusing and sitting still in class. And I mean, it's technology is like you said, addictive, but also it's instantly gratifying. It's an instant activity. You get, you know,
it makes it really hard to learn to be patient when yes. every time you want something, it's just available to yeah. you.
And especially with high speed internet, like I can't believe how, even for me, and I did not grow up with this stuff, I am not a digital native, it became a thing after I was an adult. And but right now I'll be on, you know, online looking, researching something. And if the little blue bar only goes an inch across and then it's stalled and it hasn't loaded it for in 5 seconds, I'm like, what's going on? What, the internet's down. What's happening? What? Like, where did that...
Remember dial-up?
Yeah.
You used to have to go make a sandwich, come back and wait. I can't even do that
anymore.
And
Violet's younger than us. So. Yeah.
Like, well, dial-up was just coming out in my house anyway when I was about 13, 14. So I'm yeah. sort of on the cusp because I grew up in my elementary school years not having... We had computer classes, but they weren't... on the internet, and it yeah. was just about typing, really. And so
we had typewriters.
Yeah, so did we. We didn't, and I don't know about you, Darcy, but it was a really big thing because in my high school we had like regular typewriters, and yeah. then when I hit grade 9, they got the new electric typewriters
that would erase, like you could have the screen come up and you could backspace out your corrections.
Oh, that... no, that wasn't even. Oh, that's I'm talking just electric, like just in the little.
Okay, no, we had electric typewriters, but what we got were the ones where you could get a line of display.
Yes, I remember those
before you committed. Yeah,
yeah, I worked my first serious job was at a law office, and after I was there a couple of years, they got one of those. It was so exciting. It's like, look, I can see before I press print that it's a whole line. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we've seen a lot of changes in our time. Yeah. And imagine somebody who's 90 years old, the changes they've seen in their time. It must look a little bit discouraging for them to look at their grandchildren or great-grandchildren and say, what are you guys doing with that little screen?
Yeah, right? And increasingly that's how their grandchildren want to connect with them.
Right.
And so they're, you know, they're like, they want to send them a text, an email as well, or a picture, or have them communicate on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And they're walking into that world going, this did not exist for them yeah. at all.
So yeah. we think we're more connected, but we're more disconnected from, you know, our older generation and some people who just are not as comfortable with technology. There's some younger people who aren't comfortable with it either. But, you know, so we're hyper connected, but at the same time, we aren't feeling that connection.
Right. So we're not getting the benefits that actual connection
face
gives
us. Face-to-face, yeah.
Yeah.
Or even voice-to-voice over the phone. Like, people aren't really talking on the phone as much either.
I know. You have to make an appointment to make a phone call.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Well, my joke when I moved to Salmon Arm in 2011 was I had some friends who I said, I don't know your phone voice. Because, we met at a daycare or a preschool and we'd exchange... And then we just texted. And yeah. I'm like, I have no idea what you sound like on the phone.
Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah, I know. I get it. I was actually emailing back and forth with a representative of a corporation that I was seeking sponsorship from. And we had this lovely email exchange over the course of a couple of months. And the name was kind of generic, but I just assumed it was a man. And then when she phoned, she was a woman. I'm like, huh, I just had no idea. It just,
so you know, then you picture one person in your mind.
Exactly. So yeah, it's been,
yeah, it's not just a radio voice anymore.
Yeah.
I'm having a name like Darcy. This happens to me too.
Oh,
where
yes.
I have that reaction on the other end. I was not expecting a girl. So yeah, for sure.
But the connection thing, that is a whole different discussion too, isn't it? Like the lack of empathy, lack of compassion that they're seeing in children who are growing up with the only screen connection. Like that must be something being discussed at, at this level anyway, when we're talking about trying to disconnect from screens.
Yeah. I mean, we know about with babies, for instance, and the effects of technology, even so with children, babies in particular, they are watching the adults around them, and that's how they're learning. They're putting it together, and a screen just does not have that same effect. I mean, the recommendations for like under two is basically no screen time, and that's not what's happening, of course.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because basically the information being relayed in through media, babies don't get. So they're getting almost nothing from this experience except for fast-moving images that they can't make sense of. Mm-hmm. And in order to make sense of their world, they need to be interacting with humans and copying and trying stuff out. And so there's a real detriment to them being put in front of screens, but then also the effect of parents being distracted and by screens while they're mm-hmm. parenting their young children. And I mean, we're all guilty of it, right? Where our phone goes off and we're mid-conversation or mid-explaining something to a child. And then we just like, oh, we're over here
on the phone.
Yeah, responding to the text message that just came in, and the conversation with the child will just stop.
Yeah.
Right? And so
it must be confusing for them.
Exactly, because they need us to slow it down and do that baby talk that we do with them.
Yeah.
And we're way more distracted because of that device.
I see that all the time in restaurants. Mm-hmm. What are we supposed to do? What would be the appropriate thing to do when we see a mom sitting there on her phone for 10 minutes while her baby's in the high chair, giggling and gurgling and looking around at all the other people? Like, what is there anything that we can do to help that baby understand?
Really
wave?
Yeah, I guess just try to make faces at the baby, but I would never advocate for shaming another parent.
No,
right?
I wouldn't want to do that, but I want to be able
to. How difficult
it
is nowadays.
Yeah, we've talked about this evolution that because even like my eldest was born in 2005, and I didn't have a cell phone till I want to say 2009 or something like that. So my first couple of children were raised without a technology in my hand, mm-hmm. but we would go to restaurants and we hated eating out. Oh my, we had our three children and it was like torture. And so you can understand why putting a device in front of, like, you see a lot of young children, babies with a screen on, and they're watching or they're swiping away, and the attraction to this. But what they're missing out on is the social cues of how to act in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And when you're saying to your child, you need to sit quietly. We can't run around. We need to talk. And, those sort of things, but because it's not happening. They're sitting quietly.
Yeah.
So all those opportunities for teaching and learning about how you act in a space are just gone. And
how to be a human.
Yeah. Believe me, I understand the attraction.
101.
I understand the attraction of the screen and the restaurant.
Especially when they're going nuts and running around and being all kinds of noisy.
I know. There's lots of reasons why, but there's also lots of reasons why not.
Absolutely.
Like, why did not do it?
Yeah.
Okay. We already have to take a break. You're listening to Artscape today on CKVS 93.7 FM, Voice of the Shoe Swap. I'm very fortunate to be talking today with Violet Pilkey and Darcy Calkins of Literacy Alliance of the Shoe Swap. And we're talking especially about Unplug and Play Week. So, Darcy, you were just mentioning at the break that you really wanted to get, if there was one thing people remembered from today about screen time, what was that thing?
Keep screens out of your bedrooms. Basically, this is a golden rule for everyone. There's two main reasons. One, when screens go into your kids' bedrooms, you are not able to supervise the content in the way that you can when they're in your living room, your kitchen. And I mean, so that's another part of a healthy media diet. What are your kids watching? But even more so for us as adults too, is there's a real link to screens affecting sleep. Like even the recommendation is turn your screens off an hour before you're heading to bed. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're seeing a huge correlation between lack of sleep leading to a whole bunch of unhealthy choices throughout our lives. So quality of sleep is just hugely affected. I mean, and we're not talking just kids, adults too. So, I mean, if screens could come out of bedrooms, it would just be my dream situation.
Okay, I'm just going to throw in, you can feel free to shame me all I want, but mm-hmm. here's the problem with teenagers is that their bedroom is their oasis.
Oh, yes.
Their bedroom is their workspace, their sleep space, their mm-hmm. their social space. So when they come home and they have homework, and a lot of homework now requires them to be looking online and researching things online. They go into their bedrooms, curl up in a ball, get their blanket and their pillow, mm-hmm. whatever they need, sit down at their laptop and do their work. Mm-hmm. And so they're isolated, and yet they're on their screen, and we can't really say, okay, I'm shutting off the Wi-Fi now because, and they're like, no, I got work to do. I have to mm-hmm. research this for socials. And so how do you kind of protect your teenager's space? Pull the screens out of there, or like what, how,
there is a difference too between the young kids and the older kids. Like very young kids should not have screens in their rooms at all.
Yeah.
Because they don't even know how to tell right from wrong so much and who's talking to them. So that's a real safety issue. Hopefully you can teach your teenagers what's appropriate and not appropriate for online interaction so that they can be trusted by themselves. But then take it out of the bedroom an hour before bedtime. Start mm-hmm. getting ready for bed. Turn off the screens.
They go
in the living room.
Yeah.
You know. But again, I mean, you will know your own children more or less, but I would be popping into that room. I would be checking the content.
Leave the door
open. Would be fully with my children. I mean, my eldest is 11, so we haven't crossed to this place too because they do not have their own devices, and we have a computer that's in our kitchen, mm-hmm. and that's where they have to do work when that happens. Because we don't have a laptop that they can use. But when I'm parenting them, when we get to that stage, I mean, I've heard the scary enough messages about what the ease of accessing questionable material and media out there.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm saying to them, I'm going to be checking, I'm going to be looking at all of the backgrounds and
the browser histories
and mm-hmm. I'm popping in and I'm in and out and just being aware that they can get themselves into trouble or in just seeing things that they just shouldn't be seeing or need to have someone to talk about it when they do see it. So I think we're talking about older children. You have teenagers for sure. We used to go to our room to study too. But again, if they're holding themselves up for hours on end mm-hmm. with a screen in the room, with no something productive coming out of it,
like a math, whatever studying session,
of a report.
But I mean, just really, I mean, with sleep, it's just so important.
Well, that's what I'm mostly worried about. Like, I think, I'm as an individual, I think my kids are fairly aware of the kind of content that mm-hmm. is not appropriate, and they're not necessarily, to my knowledge, accessing horrible things. But I do worry about the whole sleep thing. Like mm-hmm. we try to, and they're on a different cycle than us, Like they don't want to go to sleep until midnight or 1 a.m. So when I'm ready to go to bed, I'm in bed at 10.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of monitor that, right? How do you say, okay, that's fine.
Book.
I know.
I guess
both my kids are absolute loving. They love reading, and Sachi especially is just a voracious reader. So it's fine. It kind of works out. It's just, I feel like they're not able, like, I don't think teenagers are able to do balance yet, right?
No,
they're
a little bit insane right now. For sure. But I think you definitely want to instill that nighttime routine, setting up a nighttime routine. And if they're going to bed at midnight, at 11, turn off the screens, get into your jammies, brush your teeth, read a book, you know.
Yeah.
Start getting ready for bed because it does trigger your brain to go into sleep mode.
So even when they're not little and you don't have control, air quotes, control over, over their schedule, you still can instill a schedule and help them recognize that there is balance to be aimed for it at the very least.
And good sleep habits.
Yes.
They know what it's like to not sleep. So giving them tools to get a better sleep might. You can't control everything they do, but I think most kids are open to learning how to have a better life. And and it's just life skills.
But the screen, I mean, I think we've all fallen into this if you're binge watching whatever show that is, where you're like in bed with your iPad and going, just one more, right? And we can do this as adults and we suffer real consequences from being too tired.
Yeah.
Grumpy mom, if that's the least of it. But, you know, as a child, again, as a teenager, you know, helping them with that, say, by saying the screens have to come out. And if they're sitting on the couch in your living room doing it, again, at least they're not in their sleep space with that. Right.
It's about building that kind of structure within too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But understand bedrooms are for sleeping.
And I know people like to say, but my alarm clock is on my phone. But you know what? They do still make old fashioned alarm clocks.
Yeah, I know. Like clock radios.
Those things work.
Yes, they still do. Yeah. That's what we have.
Yeah.
Okay. So just before I know we want to talk about a specific presentation coming up, but is there anything else in terms of what we definitely want to get out there, that the screen time, it doesn't want to be the whole horrible thing that some people want it to be, right? Like, you don't want to make it that no screen time ever, because we understand that that's part of our world now. But is there anything else we absolutely need to know in terms of helping children build the balance relationship with
technology? The message is changing. The messaging is changing. It used to be that they just used to talk about number of hours in front of screens. Now the messaging is definitely about the quality of what you're watching. Not all screen time is equal. So what you are doing with your screens and what you're watching matters. We always talk about communication being one thing, but also beyond that, what are they watching and what are they getting? So supervising that content and being aware.
And then having conversations.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like when something pops up, talking to your child about it, you know, what is this message saying? Do you think they're trying to sell you something? Mm-hmm. Do you agree with the message? What do we think?
Yeah.
You know, kids are having trouble nowadays with, figuring out their critical thinking and figuring out what messages are real and which ones are fake. And we know that because they've been talking about fake news stories and how people are just believing them. Mm-hmm. So we need to teach those critical thinking skills to children. And one way to do that is when something pops up in the moment, to talk about it.
Yeah.
With a real human.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So again, that's being a present and aware of what your children are watching. So that's the new messaging, and they're actually formulating new guidelines around, you know, the quality of media that your kids are watching, not just quantity. I mean, we need kids more active. We want kids, you know, health that way. But
yeah, and that's a great segue into the next presentation that Lass is involved with. So tell me about Free Range Kids.
So this is a presentation that came across my desk, a speaker. So Lenore Scanese, who started this movement, Free Range Kids, so she has her book and her blog by the same name. And it feels like we've heard this, but it's actually not that old. It was sort of 2009 when this started coming about. So she is America's Worst Mom. And imagine so having funny. That title.
She's totally embraced it, though.
Totally. She went with it. But the presentation came across my desk as an opportunity and I had to float it out to the community, and I got enough positive response that we were able to say, we will bring her in, because this is not cheap. And so enough people felt that the message was important, enough community partners. So we were able to say, and so she's coming. It's a free event. But through this event, I've been more involved with her and reading her books and blogs.
Okay, so tell us why she's America's Worst Mom.
Well, the actual incident, there was an incident, and she was a journalist, a New York journalist, and she, her 9-year-old son, her and her husband, this was her younger of her two sons, he wanted to ride the subway, I can't remember where he was going, and on his own. And so they made a decision that they felt he was equipped to handle this, and they set him out at 9 years old to take this subway trip. And she wrote about it. So she wrote about, and she was more writing about it from the perspective of how well gone, how great he felt about that, how it was so empowering to him. And literally that night she got a call from the Today Show, I think it was her first, the next morning, can you come on, bring your son, we want to talk about this. And she talks about arriving into the studio, or into the studio, and there's the parenting expert sitting there and literally
just attacking her, basically.
Yeah. So that, and literally over the course of that week she went on just a whole host of shows defending her decision, and that really got her thinking about what is going on, that this would be viewed as the worst thing I could do as a mom. She goes, I can think of some things that would be worse.
The other thing is, she didn't just drop him off at the subway station and say, see you later, right? No. Like, they planned ahead. She gave him a map. She gave him background information, where to go if he got lost, gave him some extra money.
And practiced.
She doesn't drive. This is how her family gets around. So
he had been taking the subway with his family all those years.
Yeah.
So it was really not a matter of like, plunk, I just like stuck the kid down on the moon surface, basically, and let him fend for himself.
Yeah. But, so she started looking into why this has changed, because she started also, like many of us, we think, well, we did stuff like this when we were kids. I mean, I tell this story a lot about when I grew up in Salmon Arm, and when I was 6 years old, the swim club came and did a presentation at my grade one class, and I came home and said, Mom, I want to swim. And my mom's reaction was, she looked at the information, she thought it was a little bit expensive, and there was three of us, three girls all in a row, and she says to me, fine, if you can convince your sisters that they also want to swim, and if you walk there and walk home and I'm never driving you, then you can do this. So we were 5, 6, and 7. That's how old we were. And now, like, and so we walked to the pool. Then was where the city hall is. It was an outdoor pool, Fletcher pool. If you're as old as me, you might remember it. But we live far enough. And I remember, and I'll tell that story. I mean, that was just like,
yeah, nobody thought that was crazy. But if you see a 5, 6, and 7-year-old walking down the street nowadays, you say, "Where's that mom?" Someone's going to call the police.
Yeah, right? Well, that's a bit sad, isn't it? Because I mean, they are in a little group, so you know. The idea though is that the independence, the training of independence, is more important than the like, or more. I don't know, how do you weigh that against risk, right?
Yeah.
Because the risk is so low, but somehow perceived to be so high.
Yes, exactly.
And so the benefit is.
So this is what she's challenging, because of course we see a rise of kids with high levels of anxiety, especially as they hit into their 20s and head off onto their own. They're not sure how to navigate the world because they've had someone helping them through it. But the interesting, I mean, she'll talk about this so much. She's funny, and she'll be way better than me. But even just reading her book, what has changed is media. Why has it changed in one generation? Because of what we as adults have been exposed to as children ourselves. And so I can talk a bit more about that. The funny thing was, prior to 1971, the broadcasting rules were you couldn't even show a toilet bowl on TV. Apparently, this is why the Tidy Bowl Man was in the tank, not in the bowl.
Wow.
So
media has changed a lot.
Oh, yeah. So our parents didn't receive any of these scary images that through the 70s and 80s, and now you can think about the current images.
And now we're so connected, we're seeing things that are happening on the other side of the world that have no effect on us, really.
Yeah.
But even
fate. But it instills fear.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And Okay, we'll take a break again, and then we'll come back and talk more about that, plus the actual details of the presentation, because it is very exciting. Today on Artscape, we're talking to Violet Pilkey and Darcy Culkins about Unplug and Play Week. And we're very excited to share all kinds of activities and events, and we can get to the schedule of those later, but one of the events coming up is this talk from the Free Range Kids, worst mom in all of America, for letting her child ride the subway at the age of 9. So tell us the details about this so that people who are interested in actually hearing her speak.
Okay, if you want to hear her speak, she's speaking on Wednesday, January 25th at the Sullivan campus at Salmon Arm Senior Secondary. And at 6:30. So we are asking you to go online. It is a free event, but we, just to manage logistics, could you please go to shoeswapliteracy.ca, click on the link and get your free ticket. That would be really help us out as organizers. Yeah, we're over 220, I would say.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, we have a lot of people coming. We're very excited.
That is. Well, and I guess it's because it resonates with people. The reason they're interested is because they're thinking, yeah, you know what? Either they're in the middle of raising their kids and thinking, I don't want to make decisions that my peers will think is inappropriate. Yeah. And so I need some backup, right? Like if I want to make some decisions to help my children be more independent, I need information.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that thing is, parents are even in our, you know, area where kids are a little bit more independent than maybe in the cities, parents are still getting a bit shamed. I know my sister lives in Enderby and she let her kids who are 3 and 6 out in the backyard, which is fenced, by themselves while she was watching from the window. And a neighbor got upset with her about it. Wow. So, I mean, they're on their own property. It's fenced. They're playing with their own toys.
Yeah.
And this is real. Like, I parent 4 kids too. And every parenting decision I have to make, it's not even so much about what I deem is comfortable for my family and my children, what I think they're capable of. Can I deal with the judgment?
So now you have to defend your decisions against all the other parents and your nosy neighbors.
Yeah.
So I think,
and your own family members, totally, right? Like your mom, your sisters, whatever. And everybody's making these judgments on your behalf saying, oh, you know, you should be doing this. You should be doing that. I totally get it. I remember.
So if we get enough parents to come out and hear the presentation and decide that this is what they want for their family, is to have the free range kids, to let them do the things that they got to do as children, then they have some allies too, right? Because all the other parents were there and they've all agreed to it as well.
Yeah.
Although it's not just for people who agree with her. We do want people to come out who are maybe afraid or have heard some statistics.
Yeah. And she is she will do questions. Her presentation and she will stick around and talk and answer questions. And she's perfectly comfortable engaging with people who have different viewpoints as well. But one of the things that I've been reading her book that I found super interesting is, why has it changed so drastically? And a lot of it has to, again, come back to that media and these changes, as I was saying, the regulations have changed. But so now the images that we grew up seeing, so I was born in the 70s. And so my parents when their brains were developing, they did not see scary images. They maybe heard scary stuff through radio, but they didn't see them.
Yeah.
And the effect of being able to disseminate between real fears and stuff that isn't real is incredibly hard. We have the same physiological reaction to seeing someone, a violent action on TV, as we would to have seen it for real. Mm-hmm. And we're not very good at distinguishing. No one ever says when you see something scary, wow, that makeup artist is awesome.
Yeah, I know.
We don't do that, right?
I still have nightmares sometimes from watching television shows. Like that stuff used to be even just rated R movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now it's on TV.
Well, we were watching the original Terminator movie. Mm-hmm. Did you know that it's rated R?
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. And I mean, that movie now wouldn't, would barely get a PG.
Yeah, like, exactly.
And so standards have changed. We allow a lot more violence and exploitive, material to be acceptable in movies and TV shows.
Yeah, so. And maybe as we go along in our human development, maybe at some point our brains will be super good at disseminating between real and images you're seeing on a screen.
Yeah.
But for now, we're not there. And so there is actually people feel like it's a scarier time. And it's actually not.
It's actually less. It's the least violent century we've ever experienced.
Yeah.
Probably because everybody's inside watching TV.
That's right. But no, there's actually a book, and I'm sorry, I wish I'd kind of thought about this and got the details of that. But my friend Lois was telling me about it, that we are in a surprisingly peaceful time right now. Mm-hmm. We think it's
crime's
horrendous.
Gone down. Everything's mm-hmm. gone
yeah.
down.
And wars, like just the general sort of mass violence that has preceded this time.
Yeah.
This is a very peaceful time for us. And yet we're perceiving
yeah.
because we see it on the internet. We see horrible images from all over the world. Yeah, and so I'm not just like saying that those are not, you know, real and valid.
Yes.
Yes. But it's just that we're perceiving it as being more than ever.
It's not making sending your child to walk to school in Salmon Arm, BC more risky than it was for me.
Yeah.
But it's definitely making it harder as a parent to do that.
To take that chance. And mm-hmm. and so there's this idea that, you know, if I can just protect them. And yet, you know, we probably know the most dangerous thing we do is put them in our car and drive them to school.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but now kids aren't really walking to school. They say something like 10% of children actually walk to school.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to be something like 80%. It was much higher before.
Yeah. Yeah. And so where are they getting that exercise, right? Like, it's not by 3 times a week PE.
No.
And, you know, I mean, I know there's a bunch of kids out there that are super high athletic achievers that are in Jackrabbits and swim club and mm-hmm. everything, but there's an awful lot of kids who aren't.
And physical activity shouldn't only be for the stars.
Yeah.
No, right? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a very, I think it'll be an interesting presentation. I think it'd be, you know, the community coming out to sit and view it. It just makes it easier, right?
Yeah.
To get more and of this type of event through.
Yes, right? And to share ideas on how to make this work, right? So even helping people, like helping them with containing their fears a little bit mm-hmm. by organizing things in such a way that mm-hmm. gives the kids the benefit of the independence without freaking the parents out.
That's the whole point of the show too, because Lenore is a journalist, so she has taken the time mm-hmm. to check out the real information and dig up the facts. So she will be presenting that to us. What is real versus what is perceived?
So on the, this is the fun, one of the fun pieces of information that came out of reading her book is I've been asking people how many times do you think in the history of forever children have been seriously injured or killed due to Halloween candy tampering, razor blades and apples? How many times? Just I'll ask you if you think how many times this has actually happened.
I hear about it on the news every year.
Well, I heard about the whole, you know, legend thing, but when I was a teenager, about the razor blade and apple thing.
It's never happened. It is actually never.
So
not even once.
The thing that, like, okay, I'm not going to say how old I am, but we're talking a few decades ago. The thing that was a legend a few decades ago never happened?
It is, and it's even my husband, when I said this to him and his sort of doubting, he went online, and it's urban myth.
Wow.
And yet it's, you know, it's led
it
to...
It comes up on the news every year.
How, you know, and tell you to keep your children safe, to sift through their candy, to check for open packages, discard. We've all heard this messaging. She says it very funny, Lenore Scanese does. She says 364 days of the year, your neighbors and people in your neighborhood are just fine with your kids, but one day a year they're out to get them. Yeah. It's not real, but
right.
It's never happened. And there's some things that, like, apparently in 1968, there was a woman who didn't like the fact that kids were trick-or-treating when she felt they were too old. So she put stuff like dog food, and she put it into someone's bag, ant poison, which was labeled ant poison. She never intended them to eat it, but she got in trouble for that.
Oh, yeah.
But she was